Okay, hi, I'm Brian Cardell. I'm a developer advocate at Agalia.
And I'm Eric Meyer, also a developer advocate at Agalia. And today we're going to be talking about multimedia, and for that we have a special guest. So, special guest, please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Thibaut Saunier. I am a multimedia engineer. I work on, well, anything multimedia related around video editing, video conferencing, any video processing, basically. I am a JStreamer, a code developer, and maintainer. So I work mainly with JStreamer, on JStreamer, making sure that upstream works and that the project works properly.
So let me ask a question that probably a lot of our listeners would have. I definitely had it when I came to Agalia. JStreamer? What is that?
Yeah, so basically JStreamer is a multimedia framework. So what it does is it allows people to retrieve streams from anywhere, process them the way they want, and then broadcast them or play or record them locally and things like that. So it allows you to basically you have what we call elements, which is like low-level bricks that you can put together. So some elements will do video decoding, for example. Some elements will retrieve a multimedia stream from an HTTP server, things like that. And then you can put them together to build whatever you want with them. And then you can have elements that we call sync that will just stream the result of all the processing that you did to some other places. I am mostly working on video editing based on that whole framework. It's just a brick on top of all the basic bricks that we have in JStreamer. So it allows you to build video editing, any video editing features that you might have based on JStreamer. And the nice thing is that we have a lot of components for many different use cases. For example, you will have components to build a video conferencing system, for example. Like you will have WebRTC integrated in JStreamer. So you have an implementation of WebRTC, which allows live communication between people. And WebRTC is a web standard. So basically, we implement many web standards. And this is one for live video conferencing. And for example, you can reuse that specific element to build anything you want. So you can do all the processing you want and then just stream live through WebRTC. Or you can, like, yeah, that's a very powerful, very modular.
And okay, so WebRTC, you said that's web real-time communications, right? That's what that stands for?
Yeah, okay. That's correct.
Right. So that's the standard of doing stuff in real time.
Yeah, like communicating between people in a web browser usually, but you still have things happening server-side. So you have, in the browser, you have implementations of WebRTC so that you can build a video conferencing systems in the, in the web browser.
And so when you say video editing, I think of video editing as I'm clicking and moving stuff around on my screen. You know, saying this is a clip and I want to take this clip and I want to move it over here and I want to trim this part off and all that sort of thing. Are you, how does that happen on the server side though?
So for example, we are building a complete video editing application that runs server side, and then you have, it's a web interface. So it's a web application. It's sequence.film, the name of the product that they are building on top of JStreamer and the JStreamer editing services. And there you have like a full video editing application in your web browser. So basically you have your timeline, you have everything. And what happens is that you have your clips, as you said, like you move your clips around, you trim things, you put your effects, you do your color grading and things like that, right? And what you see is actually happening server side, and we just send a live stream with WebRTC, so that the video that you see in your web browser is actually just a WebRTC stream. So live stream that is streamed out of the timeline that is running in the cloud, and then you see like the video in the web browser. And nothing happens locally, like all the decoding, all the video processing, nothing happens locally. You just receive a stream from the server. And that uses WebRTC, as I was discussing before. So that's something that is allowed by the very modular framework that JStreamer is. You just have a WebRTC component that allows you to just have your multimedia, your video editing timeline that runs server side, and then we just stream that through WebRTC to the web browser. So for that particular use case, the focus is like full-fledged video editing, but we also have other approaches that target different audience. For example, we've been working with Tela, which builds a video editing application that allows you to produce nice looking content without really knowing what video editing is. It's a much simpler user interface and allows you to create like marketing content or courses, things like that, in a very simple way. And then it also runs all server side, like the video processing and all that will happen server side and in a very efficiently. So the user, the same way as for Sequence, they don't need like powerful computers to do that. They basically need, for Tela, they basically need a webcam and being able to have a decent video internet connection, I mean.
Yeah, those both look like really cool projects.
Yeah.
So like, Eric, I think the way that I think about this is like if I was implementing a front end, you know, like those pictures that you might see, the stills on a timeline, they're just stills, right? And then like at some point I would want to select a time, like a time chunk and say like, delete this. But I would, on my front end, I would think I would translate that into like a command that I would send to the server that says like, I intend to delete this. You would do that on the server, done, and then the front end would update that it was done.
Yeah, but at the same time, you will see in the viewer, so in the video that you have, because always in video editing application, you have the timelines, and then you have the video that is the result of the timeline, right? Mm-hmm. So what happens is that if you cut some parts, and you were, like your playhead was at that position, it will just mm-hmm. update the video. But what happens mm-hmm. is that you send the command, as you said, like remove that, that it will mm-hmm. happen server side, and then you will have the actual video resulting from that edit coming in directly in the
right,
in the
right, browser. Yeah.
So I'm curious. So I, because of my background and just sort of the things that I've seen over the years, my assumption would have been that basically all of that was being done in the browser. What's the advantage to doing like the editing on the server as opposed to locally?
In that case, the very important, interesting part is that you can have collaborative editing, basically. So you have several people working on the same project, and then you have all your media assets are actually stored in the cloud. So you don't have to have huge amount of memory of disk on your computer. You don't need big computers with any, you can just go and edit with a tablet while the processing should be very expensive in that case, if you're uh-huh. doing color grading and complex effects and things like that. But it all happens in the cloud, so you just need like some computer, a good internet connection, a decent internet connection, and that's it. You can edit with.
And you don't have to worry about, I accidentally dropped my laptop and the hard drive is destroyed.
Yeah.
We're back to thin computing. Woohoo!
Yeah, I mean... Okay, so GStreamer is a framework, and this is one of the things that you can do with it. But it's like other things that are used for video editing. It can be used by a lot of things. Like FFmpeg is a thing that I've used a lot. It's used by a lot of things. I think it's also even used by GStreamer. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So basically, GStreamer aims at allowing people to use different like technology that implements different things. And FFmpeg is one of those things that implements very well decoding and things like that. While it can use that, but it reuses many libraries and wraps many libraries and allows like developers to use a same common API to work with all those libraries in a coherent and simple way, basically.
So it is used on server. It's used in web browsers as well, right?
Yeah. Well, for example, we have a port of WebKit, WP WebKit, WebEngine that uses GStreamer for all the multimedia web standard implementations. So it's very at the very heart of all multimedia processing there. The nice things with using JStreamer is that on any platforms where on any platforms you can just use the same API, and then you will have you will be using like the video decoder for that very specific embedded platform. But at the web engine level, you don't need to care about all those decoders and all that, because JStreamer does just like hide it from you. So you can just use the same API everywhere.
So I think there's work to do this in Servo too, right?
Yeah, in Servo, the base multimedia implementation is also based on JStreamer. It's not very advanced yet, but yeah.
But that seems big, given the thing that you said, because WP WebKit, at least currently, is Linux. It's for embedded Linux. We are working on Android port, which then would be able to take advantage of the thing that you're talking about, where there's like a different operating system and you can take advantage of the stuff for that. But with Servo, you know, it's available on like 5 or 6 platforms already. So, you know, having the same API be able to use on all those seems like a really good advantage.
Yeah, that's for sure. And that's like, with JStreamer, you have all those platforms also covered. Works, for example, in my case, I work with my clients often on macOS, and then you have it working on Linux, obviously, that is the main place where we use it in the cloud. And then it has support for Android, iOS, everything. You implement it. You implement like the backends for Servo once, and then it should work everywhere. Well, you will have issues specific to platforms sometimes, but yeah.
So with WPE and embedded systems, and the fact that it works on embedded systems and Linux, and I imagine it's used in a lot of. I mean, I don't imagine. I know that it's used in a lot of products, but just give you an opportunity to like maybe talk about some of those use cases and things that it is used in, so that people who don't do this kind of thing get a sense of what kind of things it's used in.
Yeah. On set-top boxes, in many of them, for sure. And then you have in TVs also, like LG and Samsung have their own multimedia backend based on JStreamer. Samsung in particular, I used to work there, and they had like everything for Tizen is JStreamer based. So they have their own, they have their own version of JStreamer with a few tweaks on top, but mostly they have their own plugins, because one thing that is interesting with JStreamer is also that it's plugins based. So it's very easy like to extend JStreamer for your use case, just implementing your plugin, reusing, so you have two types of API, we could say, like one for plugin implementation and one for like usage of the API. For embedded platforms in general, it's used heavily in many different places. Then you have many apps on Android and iOS that are JStreamer, that use JStreamer in some places. Sometimes it uses both like the native APIs and then JStreamer for the things like that. Then in conferencing system, like, so that's more server side again, video conferencing. For example, systems that allows to have people coming from different platforms like Teams and Google Talk and different things, that there are systems that are JStreamer based that allows people to just communicate between all those platforms. They don't even notice that they are talking with different platforms. For AI system also, it's quite heavily used. For example, NVIDIA itself actually offers multimedia framework for AI, basically very focused on AI, and it's actually all JStreamer based. So they have the kind of fork of JStreamer, and that's what they propose their user to use. I think that's interesting, because there are tons of systems that actually use JStreamer through their own thing, and upstream JStreamer is not really happy with that, because it's not properly done in many places, I think. And we are basically working on making sure that we have all the right tools upstream for AI. So for video analysis and then all the metadata and anything you can imagine with AI on video, right? More about analyzing videos than generation, because generation is now, you don't really need a GStreamer for that, I think. What another place where it's very heavily deployed is for IP cameras. So you have manufacturers that build their camera with all the multimedia processing happening inside the camera that is GStreamer based, and then it sends the streams to the like surveillance platform that they have, and they have like big systems for like all the video surveillance that you can get inside cities and inside wherever you want. And those are also like the receiving sides, also just streamer based. For example, Axis is one of a big just streamer user for 20 years or something. So they build all those on just streamer.
Wow. So like Ring doorbells, for example, the doorbells with cameras built in, things like that.
I haven't seen any people. No one called us to build that. But I would be surprised if there is none. It's most likely some people use GStreamer for those, almost for sure. I've never had a client doing that, but yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So what about I know a lot of people use things like WPE for like digital signage is a really popular use case, or something that I don't know what you call it, but it's sort of like I don't even know if you have them in Europe, but here in the US, if you go to the gas pump, they have like a screen that is interactive, and a lot of times they're like, oh, another opportunity to show you ads, and they play video. So I would imagine that's another use case.
That's for sure. I've worked with many people doing that, actually, like for digital signage in general, with like big, you also have like the case where you have big screens with 10 screens that have to be exactly synchronized and things like that. So they've built product on top of that. Also, one thing that is interesting I've worked on in the past is like little how called that to listen to music, you know, and you have several speakers in different rooms and things like that. So you use GStreamers to just synchronize them together so that you move around and it's all playing nicely and synchronized.
Oh, that's cool. Like Sonos had that where it was IP coordinated. Yeah. So
those kind of products have worked on those, and GStreamer is used in many cases. It has in the framework you have a very well designed way of synchronizing things together, you can guess, and synchronizing through the network and things like that. So you have those components to allow that and make it simple. Well, simpler and simpler. It used to be a bit more complex, but these days it's getting really simple to just get things working and synchronized between wherever you want. So
that ability to do things like synchronize displays and audio output, speakers, etc. So GStreamer is not really just video. It sounds like you can use it for more than just sending video back and forth.
Yeah, right. It's just data processing in the end. So for one interesting example is the LIGO project, which is a project that discovered the gravitational waves. They were actually using GStreamer to detect the waves. So to do the data processing, and they had huge pipelines with hundreds and thousands of elements. So they had their own elements that were doing like some data processing inside. That's the component that allowed them to do the analysis of all the and removing the noise and all that. I don't know exactly the details, but there was a conference before they discovered the waves that presented how they used GStreamer to actually do the data processing. And it's interesting because you can basically process whatever you want. But most people just use it for audio video, right? Mm-hmm. But you can process whatever you want. So it's very flexible in that matter.
So yeah, so any stream of data, basically, yep. You're saying yeah. You could do stuff with, do something to, or act upon, or whatever. So it's, you could use it for, like, as they did, for signals analysis. You know, in their yep. case, they're looking for gravitational wave signals. You could use it on a sonar system, like an underwater sonar or radar or something like that, to try to pull signals out of that stream of data. That's interesting, because when you think about it, when I think about it, because I don't usually think about it, as I'm thinking about it now, video is it's a stream of data, and if you have good ways of handling video or audio streams and applying filters and doing other, you know, transforming them, then yeah, fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, those are at least audio still, but I imagine based on what I'm hearing, you could like do something with like real-time stock data or something like that. That's completely unrelated to sound or video in any way, but you could still do some kind of, I don't know what kind of processing you would do on it, but it sounds like you could do that.
Yeah. Potentially. Yeah. Or seismograph data. That would be interesting if you can use G-Streamer to detect gravitational waves in laser interferometry data, which is what LIGO or LIGO uses. You could probably detect earthquake precursors if you knew what to look for out of like a whole bunch of seismographs, right? Like all of the seismograph data coming in at once, and then you could use G-Streamer to combine it all and then analyze it. That's fascinating.
So what we're saying is all of the scientific community,
right?
Call us.
Right.
We can help.
G-Streamer, all the data. James Webb be another example of stuff that could be analyzed. The deep sky surveys that are happening.
I'm living in Chile, and I talked a bit with some people that work on the huge telescope. I can't remember the name right now.
I mean, they have several now. So
no, the biggest one that is in Atacama near San Pedro.
Yeah,
And over there, basically, he was explaining me that they were building a system to do exactly what G-Streamer does in the end. And we said, okay, it's too late because they've been working on that for a few years, but it was very similar. Like what they wanted is actually what G-Streamer could have provided from the start. But
Fascinating. If only we had talked to them sooner. Anyway. Yeah. Maybe that's the very large, whatever it's called. I mean, there's one that's, I think, literally called the Very Large Telescope.
Maybe we could analyze some CERN data with this.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. The Large Hadron Collider data that I'm sure you could use G-Streamer to do stuff with that.
Cool. Yeah.
Based on what I've just learned.
El Alma, it's called the one I was talking about.
Okay.
So, you know, Agalia Chats, we're, largely focused on the web. You know, Eric and I's background is a very important part of what we do at Agalia. But I think one of the things that's really interesting to me is that there are a few projects that sort of are super complicated and somehow underpin a lot of the things that the web platform does make possible. So, like G-Streamer or Skia is another one. That's just like, these are phenomenally complicated projects. I just wanted to maybe talk about like, what is the sort of size of this project? Do you know what I mean? Like how many lines of code, how many people work on it? How big is the community? Just to give our listeners a sense of, you know, what that's like.
Yeah. So I think it's like 3 million line of codes, more or less. And we have around 200 contributors every year. So people provided some patches. For co-contributors, people that actually commit every month, let's say, I think we are 20, 25 people, I think. And they are from many companies in the end. Like, they are, I don't know many companies, but if you look at the JStreamer conference that happens every year, we're around 150, 200 people every time, and people coming from 30 companies, 40 companies. There are several companies like us that do consultancy around JStreamer, and then many companies that are just like building products on top. And we have, I think we have like 5,000 commit a year or something like that. So it's quite big. Not as big as Web Engine, right? But still.
No, but I'm saying the web engine relies on also some of these really big projects to make really complicated things possible, right? I mean, to do all of this complicated stuff, to show video, to, you know, make embedded systems that show video and stuff like that, JStreamer is really important part of that, you know. Mm-hmm. If you had to implement all that stuff yourself or find different ways to do it, it would be more difficult, and, you know, it's not, wouldn't work on so many platforms. And I just think that some of these big sort of projects that empower many, you know, many platforms that have to do with like font rendering and like text shaping, you know, like there's a few like big complicated projects that wind up being shared that are themselves big complicated open source projects that deserve and provide a lot of funding into the ecosystem, that then at the top web browsers are one of the things that take advantage of them and can build great things out of, you know. But they're not the only things.
Yeah. Besides, you mentioned a sequence as a thing that we've worked on.
Can you actually talk about that a little bit? Like, what exactly is it?
Well, it's a full video editing application. So, if you look at it, it's the same as Adobe Premiere or something like that. But the goal is to have it work exclusively in the cloud. So then you have a web front end. So you just like connect to the web page, and then you access everything you need to edit your videos live with interactive. Well, everything you need. Basically, I like to see it like as the Google Docs of video editing. You can see it like that. So collaborative video editing in the browser.
Okay. What are some other things that we've been doing with JStreamer?
Well, many of them. One thing that is also interesting is we were building a 3D modeling application that also happens. So it's a web app also, like you have a web front end, and then everything happens server side. So that it's also a thin client, as you said before, where you just get into the web page and you interact with the page. So, but it actually like sends the comments directly when you click and all that. It sends the comments to a JStreamer pipeline, and the source of the JStreamer pipeline is actually where the 3D modeling is happening. So in that case, it was like a CUDA source, and they were just like rendering their 3D models live in the source, and then we just stream that through WebRTC to the web browser. So it's okay. Remote computing in some way, but very, very specific with very optimized path.
Okay. Again, let me see if I've got this right. So I connect to the server that has a 3D model of a table.
Yeah.
And I want to rotate the table in my view.
Yeah.
So I do stuff on the screen. All of my input data is sent to the server, and it makes those, it does the actual change, like rotation, and the video of that is streamed back to me.
Yeah, and what you're interacting in the browser, what you're interacting is actually a video. So it's a video stream you interact on.
Right. So, you know, where I clicked and where I dragged and all that sort of like, et cetera, in order to spin the view. Mm-hmm. I'm not actually, I don't have a model on my computer and I'm not spinning the model on my computer. My browser is not doing the math to rotate the view. It's just sending my inputs to the server. The server's doing that stuff and I'm getting a stream back of the video of it, of the server doing those things. And it, you know, also if I click on a tool to add a shape and I start adding the shape, the same thing's happening. None of that's happening locally. It's all streaming between the server and me.
Yeah.
That's wow.
it's interesting. And that's the kind of things that GStreamer allows you to do quite easily.
So I don't know the answer to this question, but when we were at WebKit contributors meeting, the people from, I want to say NVIDIA, I could be wrong. They come every year and they're really big on cloud gaming. And I know, like, you know, Sony also has some interests in this area. And a lot of them have now things with sort of like lightweight glasses that even some are tethered and some are not. But, you know, like if you put on those glasses, they're just like, they are literally just streaming the video. Like there's no big processing on the glasses on those. Like it's just like literally streaming to you. So it needs to be lightweight, efficient, and that's all it does. It doesn't do more. And I'm curious, like, do you know if anybody is using this for sort of like cloud gaming type things?
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing as what I was saying about.
That's why I mentioned it.
Yeah. I don't know any company that uses GStreamer. Maybe they do. We just don't know. For example, NVIDIA, when they do things with GStreamer, they don't tell us. We don't even know. In the end, sometimes we figure out at some point, but I don't know any company that does that. I know we've been working server side to have WP WebKit work properly with game web services, you know. But server side, I don't know. I can't remember any. I'm quite sure there are some, but.
You say sometimes we find out and like there are things that we work on that we sort of, you know, don't talk about, but almost all the things, if you can interact with it, that you can find where there's like sort of the open source licenses and you can see a lot of our work in those things. So sometimes we discover, you know, like, you know, you're on a train or something and you find a thing in there and you click check, hey, is there any more software on here?
Well, that's also a use case where we have GStreamer deployed in many cases, the plain screens. We've been working on that, and many of them, I think, use GStreamer.
Yeah. If they're frustrating, they're not GStreamer.
No, those are not.
There we go. Didn't we also do some like work about Vulkan Video and GStreamer?
Yeah, well, we have been working on a bit on the standards, but mostly on implementing Vulkan Video support in GStreamer. We are like one of the first actual users of the new Vulkan Video API, which aims at providing the same API for all the platforms to do hardware video decoding and encoding. And we will. Well, we already have a standard that supports most codecs and that work on most platforms, but Mac and Apple-based products don't have support for it. But for the others, eventually we'll have drivers for, Linux and Linux, Windows, and Android, basically. Hopefully.
Okay.
And so phone-based platforms also is interesting, because right now for hardware codecs on a bit platforms, it's a bit of a mess, because they all have their own kind of their own APIs and things like that. It's getting better because we have V4L2, but with Vulkan it will make everything simpler, I think.
I wonder if we can talk about this, because like I say, Eric and I talk about the web a lot, and sometimes we talk about how Egalia ourselves invests in things and why we do that. And we talk sometimes about work that we are kind of allowed to talk about, like, oh, Bloomberg Tech funded our work on CSS Grid, and here's why they did it. And, IO, the ad blocker company, funded our work for CSS has select pseudo class. And here's why they did it. And like, there are all these success stories in there, but I think there's a lot of stuff that Egalia does that's, not the stuff that we talk about. And it might be interesting to talk about, like, how do we end up working on that? How do we end up working on sequence.film? How do we end up, like, why do companies approach us? Do companies approach us? Like, how do we end up working on these things?
Yeah, for video editing, I've been working on that on my free time for a long time in GStreamer. And then basically we built, back then for Nokia, we built the GStreamer editing services, which is very the component that exposes the required APIs for video editing. And then basically we got contacted by, for example, Sequence or Tela, which is another company that does video editing with GStreamer. And then they ask us to, sometimes they ask us to help them with the API, but usually it's not the case anymore. We have good enough documentation and all that. They ask us to, push forward some features that are missing or optimize. That's often what they require. Like, they need the thing to be as optimized as possible for their specific use case. So that's something that happens a lot. And while we still have many features for like full post-production scenarios, we still have features that are missing or still a bit buggy, because many features that we have in GS, for example, have been developed by Google Summer of Code student or people like that. So happens that we need to finalize the work that has been done by students. Many times we have features that are very specific to their use case that they need, and then they just ask us to implement that.
What can you give us an example of that?
For example, we have nested timeline support in GS that allows you to have timelines, clips that are actually a timeline beneath. So that some people work on a scene, and then you have the full movie where you have some scenes that are, so you put the clip that is just the scene, and then you have the other scenes, etc. And as they want to be collaborative, they need if someone somewhere is working on a specific scene and the other one is working on on the full movie, let's say, they want the scene that is being edited by someone else, the changes to that scene to be visible right away when you are on the full movie.
Whew.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's something that they wanted, and we just implemented that. So you have live updates of sub-timelines, which is not the way we built the feature didn't imply that, because it was not really, we didn't think it was really useful. But for that case where you have collaborative editing, it's really nice to have everything happen together and updated live and all that.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. I could see very similar for audio production, since we were talking about that. Producing music, for example, if you had, an album as a timeline and then each song as a timeline, and if it's a progressive rock band, then each chapter of the song is its own timeline, all nested inside of each other. And then people can be, yeah, that's interesting.
That is actually interesting. I wonder if, you know, to produce this show, we use Audacity.
Mm-hmm.
And I would actually much prefer a web interface, especially one that was collaborative, so we don't have to, you know. So I wonder if we could try using Sequence or something like that.
Yeah, probably.
To do that. Is it a use case that would work for that kind of thing? Or
I guess so, yeah, probably. Also, one thing that is interesting, like I was saying, we also work for Tela, which is another like web app. But they are more focused on, right now they're more focused on like presentation, let's say. So you want to market a product or something like that. So you have your screen and then you are recording yourself presenting the product or it's not necessarily a product. It can be a course or whatever. Mm. You just are presenting something and then they are able like to edit that in a few seconds, basically. So first they have AI that generates a potential timeline that you can then edit, you know, but it tries to like build the thing and it has nice feature, like a nice transition. And then it will try to like zoom where it needs to zoom and then zoom out when it's not needed and put the faces in the right place and move the, like when they see that what is important is the presentation, then it will focus on the presentation, then go back to show the person speaking and things like that, you know, tries to automate that. So you have a final render, and the thing that we do is basically, well, all the drawing and the rendering, and then we are able like to render the full presentation in a few seconds because we just like have we render each chunk in parallel on different servers. So it's very fast. It's nice. And one of the next feature that we are going to work on, well, there are, and we are next year is basically building a product where it will be able to do the same thing, but have several people either talk together or present something. So in the end, it will be able like to prepare a timeline with the edits for you and like doing the transition when someone is speaking. And well, in the case if it's only audio, it's a bit less interesting, I guess. Mm. But still, that's also a use case we have that is quite interesting, I think.
Okay.
And for, well, rendering, for editing that kind of conversation that we have right now, I think that will be the ideal tool once it does everything. The thing is that they already have all the infrastructure through the simple presentation thing. What they need is just to be able to have several people discussing when they are doing the presentation.
Mm. Yeah, that's really interesting. So, you know, we've talked about cool stuff that we've done in GStreamer. Are there any things that you would particularly love to work on that's GStreamer related, but we haven't really had a chance to do that?
Well, I am very happy to be able to work on video editing, like in particular, and all the feature that. But there is one thing that is, well, as I discussed a bit about that before, but we really need to, I think it's important these days to have a good story, a good API, good foundation for AI in particular in GStreamer, that where we have almost all the pieces to be able to do whatever you would need with AI for AI. Video analysis and all that. And we have been working on bringing the required APIs on upstream GStreamer. I would like to, that we work a bit more on that and understanding more everything that is doable thanks to that. Because many people just use like web services to do their things, but I'm sure that we could give a better user experience for developers that require, video analysis in many different ways at the same time, things like that, because GStreamer also allows you to use different inference engine and different things and bring all that together. So that's it.
Okay, so when you say AI can mean a lot of things these days.
Well, in that case, it's really about analysis, video analysis. It's more, it's not really generation, okay. Not generative AI, but rather...
So it's more integration such that it's easy to tie in like an AI transcriber or something that analyzes the video, you know, in some way, and then maybe produces a transcription or, I think you were saying like suggests, you know, zooms and pans and things like that.
Yeah. Right now there are web services that allows that, but for example, for Tela, if we could have JStreamer do everything, because it would make a lot of sense in that case, but we don't really have that yet. Even though there are models that are available for these kind of things, but yeah, I think it can be useful.
Okay. Or I guess hooking up neural network analysis to seismograph and James Webb Space Telescope data streams or whatever, you know, stuff out in Atacama. Okay. So that makes sense. So those links are tenuous? Are they still being written into the specification, or there's a specification that hasn't been implemented? Like, where does that stand?
No, it's, we have new APIs upstream that people need to use more. So, yeah, I think it's all well specified. The APIs is not fully stable yet, but we have, like, you can describe any kind of metadata because that's mostly what it's about, and having the good relationship between metas and things like that, you know. But then you need to be able to run that on any model, and then you need specific things to decrypt the data that the model generates and things like that. So it has to, we have to build upon what we have right now.
Okay.
For example, I think for video editing also, you can build like nice things instead of spending so much time looking watching the footage that you have, and then put yourself the metas, but what is happening and when and all that. That should be automated, I think. That's the kind of things that would make sense. And that's also one thing that having video editor, like video editing application in the cloud, that allows you to just like run that automatically and gather the data. And so it's just like part of, because I don't think you can run, most of the time you cannot run the inference model on the machine you are editing on, right? So you would have to send the footages and then have the analysis happen there, and then
Okay. That makes sense.
So now Eric was asking, like, you know, what's something that you would like to work on? I guess I would say we have a lot of people who listen to the show for various reasons. They work for various organizations, various companies. Like, I would ask, like, if there's something that you would say to those organizations about, like, give your pitch about what's something that maybe GStreamer could do for them that they might want to, you know, come talk to us about.
Well, basically anything multimedia related, if you have anything to do with audio, video, live or not, and post-processing and all that, that's for sure we can help. Yeah. And anything in the browser also, like for WPE and all that, we are very, we know it. We know everything in there. So that's what we can help most. I'm convinced that GStreamer should be used much more for post-production use cases. Many times people just use FFmpeg with their own big scripts and all that, and we offer like much better interfaces to do video editing than what FFmpeg can do. So, yeah.
Excellent. Thanks. I enjoyed talking to you and like learning more about what GStreamer does. I like doing these things that are like a little bit outside our wheelhouse. Hopefully our listeners also like the occasional change up where we get to learn about something completely different and completely new that we do. Thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you.